story's told that a nun was driving her old car and just wasn't paying attention to the fuel. What do you call that? The fuel indicator, the gauge, gas gauge. Thank you. Wow. And about a mile past a gas station, she runs out of gas. Thankfully, it was only a mile. So she's pulled over. She gets out and she walks that mile back and she says, I need gas. But my car's a mile down the road and I don't have a gas tank. And the gas attendant says, ma'am, I'm sorry, but I don't have a can for you to put gas in for you to use. She said, I mean, can't you just look anywhere? You know, what about your shed back there? Can anything back there? He says, well, look, I'll give it a try. And he goes back there. And he looks and he looks and he looks and he finally comes out with a bedpan. A bedpan. And so he says, ma'am, it's going to be a little bit heavy. You're going to have to carry it with two hands. But I don't think it'll spill. I think you're going to be okay. But I got a bedpan here for it. I'll fill it up with gas. And then you fill up your car, bring it back here, and we'll fill up the tank. So he puts gas in it, and she carries. And she finally gets there exhausted, pouring gas into the tank. And while she's pouring the last drops in, a truck driver pulls up next to her, rolls the window down, and he says, sister, I wish I had your faith. Yeah, you're going to think about that one, right? Regardless of our misunderstanding, like the truck drivers, the world has truly poured a bunch of garbage into us. And I believe God wants to do a miracle by faith, and he wants us to pour out what will be a blessing filled with love and zeal as we pour ourselves into this year for his kingdom. You know what? I believe that God has privileged us to be able to experience zeal. We're going to see this in David's life, and I pray as I read, it's going to be like 45 verses, so it's going to be a lot of reading tonight. And yes, it is about David slaying Goliath, but we're going to cover half today and half next week. We need to understand that zeal is ignited, and it's really seen in the midst of the worst of conditions. When everything seems to be against you, that's when they say heroes rise up. And heroes, one thing that characterizes them is not just their boldness, but their zeal, right? Their zeal. I love it when Braveheart, that William Wallace is rallying the troops. Ah! You know, you want to be right there and going to war. Well, maybe not going to war, but you get the idea. It's like, we want to fight for our freedom. And they were willing to die for that. Because just how the Scots were being treated under the English rule. The Philistines were ruling, for the most part, Israel. They were controlling them. Now, they had their own king. Saul was king and had been king for several decades, but the Philistines intimidated them. It says here in 1 Samuel 13:9, you don't need to turn there, it says, not a blacksmith could be found in the whole land of Israel. Do you know why? Because blacksmiths make weapons like swords and spears, and they sharpen them. And it says a few verses later, it says, when they wanted their plowshares sharpened, they had to go to the Philistines to do that. And so there was this sense of domination. The king Saul was doing whatever he could so that the people were not completely enslaved to them. So they would go to war, and chapter 17 is no exception. Israel's actually starting to gain some ground, but the Philistines are at it again, and they're intimidating them. Chapter 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Succah in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes-Damim between Succah and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up the battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the Valley of Elah between them. Valley of Elah is a little over 10 miles, say close to 15, but between 10 and 15 miles, excuse me, southwest of Jerusalem. Next week I'm going to talk about Jerusalem because it's actually mentioned in this chapter very briefly, but it's important. So that's the general location if you're looking at a map, and many of your Bibles have maps in the back. I even have some maps that the authors or people actually included with these pages in 1 Samuel, just to give you kind of a snapshot view of this. But it says, continues on in verse 4, it says, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall, 9 feet, 9 inches to be exact. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scaled armor of, excuse me, of bronze, weighing 5,000 shekels. That's about 125 pounds. Okay? Have you ever had a backpack or something? Have you ever carried 125 pounds? Not a problem for him. He wore it all day. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. That's about 13 pounds. I don't know if you've ever had a heavy weight on just something this long. A weight here is very, 13 pounds especially, is very hard to hold in your hand. He had a spear. Now, generally, you don't throw the spears, use it like this, because it would be longer than a sword, and you could have an advantage there. So generally, you use two hands. But here, he's got a sword, he's got a javelin, he's got a spear with this massive head, and his shield bearer went ahead of him. So he didn't have an armor bearer, per se, to carry his weapons. He had a shield bearer. I can only imagine how big that thing was. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you're not the servants of Saul? Well, choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites, how many of the Israelites, church? All pretty much means all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of an Ephratite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. So Ephratah is the region, Bethlehem the town. Jesse had 8 sons. David's the youngest. And in Saul's time, he was old and well advanced in years. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. Now that does not mean that David is not of the age to fight. We'll talk about that in a moment. But his 3 oldest brothers were actually in the army. The firstborn was Eliab. We'll get to hear what Eliab has to say in just a moment. The second, Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. How many times did he give this defiant charge then? 40 times 2 is 80 times. That's getting a bit monotonous. Now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp." Now, Bethlehem was a little bit closer to the Valley of Elah, because Bethlehem is about 5 miles south of Jerusalem. "Hurry to the camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commanders of their unit." That would basically be a commander of 1,000. See how their brothers, see how your brothers are, and bring back some assurance from them. They're with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines. Early in the morning, David left the flock with the shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. So this is Jesse's direction. His dad, well along in years, directed him to do this. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines, facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines and greeted his brothers. As he was talking with them, Goliath the Philistine, champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. When the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. How many of the Israelites ran from him in great fear? All. That's important. All. Because that's who include David's brothers. Now the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt him from his father's family from taxes in Israel. Oh, that'd be enough right there, right? Three things: great wealth, daughter in marriage, taxes, no more. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what will be done for the man who kills him. When Eliab, that is David's oldest brother, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Kind of like an arcade game. Video, right? Now what have I done? Said David. Can't I even speak? He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy. That is, you are a youth. We'll get to that in a little bit. He's been a fighting man from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. There we go. Oh, Saul's totally comfortable with this. Oh, you're a shepherd. Of course. You go fight him. Your servant's been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This circumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. I hope you can hear his incense. He's incensed that this Philistine would defy God's armies. Remember, zeal seeks to defend the honor of God, his people, worship, truth, these things. We cover those. And this is God's people. We are God's chosen people. Guys, what are we doing? Let someone rise up and fight. And so David is now saying, I'll do it then. I'll do it. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took a staff in his hand. So he's got his staff, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch, of a shepherd's bag, and with a sling in his hand approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw he was only a boy. That is, he saw that he was a youth, ruddy and handsome. I think he's just trying to simply say, this is a good-looking guy. What are you doing on the battlefield? This is for scar-faced warriors, right? And he despised him, it says. He said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? That is, he's got his staff in his hand, right? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. And I'm going to stop right there, because I know you want to reach the climax. We're going to look at that next week, though. Spoiler alert, David wins. Just thought I'd, if you were wondering. Wow. Goliath, what a behemoth. 9 feet, 9 inches, or as they say, 6 cubits, which is 1.5 feet, and a span, which is from tip of your thumb to the tip of your pinky, which is generally about 9 inches. I measured mine, and it is actually 9 inches, at least for me. But they figured on average it would be 9 inches. 9 foot, 9 inches. This guy's huge. Did you realize that there are people, I think the David Ladlow, I think is his name. He lived in the early 1900s. Tallest man on record, 8 foot, 11 inches. Very skinny. He had a brain tumor that he got, I think he was 22 when he died, but he got it several years earlier and it in his pituitary, and it triggered growth hormones that made him grow, just grew, hugely grew. Generally, people who go over 8 feet tall, they're skinny, not always, but generally they're, several people who have hit these records had that brain tumor in their pituitary, by the way. Again, not all of them. There is one woman, I think that she is close to 8 feet that she lived. She was not super skinny, but generally they are. Their bones tend to be brittle, and they're not very strong because of this. their body just cannot deal with that height. That is not Goliath. Goliath is strong. He's a warrior. That would, for us, that would be like an athlete. He knows how to do battle. He knows how to get in there like a wrestler and take you down. He knows how to run hard and win. He knows how to, if he were in the javelin toss, he would easily win it. This is the kind of guy that Goliath was. His armor, 125 pounds. He had a sword, a spear, and a javelin. The javelin swung across his back. That's generally the one that he would throw. The head of the spear, I mentioned, 13 pounds. A warrior from his youth. So I Googled this, and we'll see if AI was right. But I said, hey, if you take a 6 foot man who weighs 200 pounds, if he grew to be 9.5 feet tall, how much would he weigh? And Google said about 700 pounds. So I'm about 200 pounds, I'm 6 feet. And so if you took me and stretched me another 3 feet plus, 3 foot, 9 inches, and just my same proportions, about 700, maybe a little bit more pounds. 700 pounds, okay? That's how big, he was probably built more muscular than I am, for sure, as a warrior. So he is not this skinny guy, that many of the giants in our day that have set Guinness Book of World Records height-wise, Not skinny like that. Nope. Strong. He was intimidating to the Israelites. As a matter of fact, in verse 11, we read that Saul and all the army were dismayed, discouraged, and fearful. Saul was fearful. I think that plays into how he interacts with David. Eliab, I think it interacts with how Eliab answered his brother. Because these were all afraid when Goliath would come to his position on the other side of the valley of Elah and hurl his defiance against God and the armies of God. And in verse 24, it even says that the army ran from Goliath when he took his stance in great fear. Goliath was an intimidator. As we're going through this, I want you to just imagine, not just Goliath, but I want you to imagine Satan himself. Satan is the great intimidator. I mean, if you were actually to have Goliath fight Satan, yeah, I think Satan would take him in like that. Satan is an intimidator. He hurls lies, he hurls accusations. He seeks to intimidate you, make you feel small. We'll get into that in a little bit. Satan is our intimidator. But I'm talking about Goliath right now, but I do want you to keep Satan in the back of your mind. And David sees this defiance, this intimidation, and he's not intimidated. He's not feeling afraid at all. He's angry. David is angry. And he begins to ask, what will happen to the person who kills this giant? What do you think is going through David's mind? Do you think he's going to encourage his brother to do it? Well, his brother ran from the front lines. They all ran back. So he is here, and he's seeing the army in front of him, and they're running back. They're running away from Goliath. What is going on here? David's just thinking, this should not be. So I want you to see zeal is starting to ignite in David. And even labels what Goliath is doing. He is an uncircumcised Philistine defying the armies of the living God. David wants to defend the honor of God's people. As I'm going through this, so Goliath is the great intimidator. Satan is our great intimidator. The Israelites are God's people. You are God's people that Satan is seeking to intimidate. And I am encouraging, let zeal arise. Just like it happened in David's life. We're going to look at that this week and next. Let zeal rise up within your heart as it did with David. In various things. We'll look at those, the application in a bit, but I just want you to think zeal right now is beginning to be ignited in David's heart. He is zealous. Remember, zeal is not an emotion, it's a devotion. Now, I believe that when you're zealous, that will ignite emotion, but zeal is rooted in truth, knowledge. Godly, proper zeal is rooted in truth. We're going to see that in David's life. It is not an emotion. It is a devotion. What is the devotion in David's life? Have any of you read the Psalms? What is David's... Excuse me. Thank you. It's the Lord. Psalm 23, David wrote that one. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And he's talking about this, who this shepherd is and how he cares for him. David regularly speaks about his love and his devotion to the Lord. So this is the very nature of David. I am sure that as a shepherd, many times, thank you, sir, I appreciate that. Many times, I can only imagine, and if you happen to remember Mike Jeffords, he would talk about David's field time. And I just thought, you know, that's great. David, a psalmist, had his field time. You know, I was out in the field watching the shepherds. What do you think he was doing? Well, I'm sure that that's where he crafted many of his psalms. And I imagine that some of those psalms developed and he wrote them down, and we have them in our Psalter in this, the book of Psalms, 150. He didn't write all of them, of course, but he did write some, many of them. And it came from a heart that was en fuego, on fire. He loved. We talked about Jesus being our first love. God is our first love. You know, I was with Zion and Tay-Tay, and so I said, hey, guys, who's our first love? What are we singing about? We're singing about Jesus. He's our first love. That's right. He's our first love. Church, is Jesus your first love? I believe that God was David's first love. And you hear this when Goliath the Intimidator intimidates. And it stirs this response and anger, a zeal in David's heart. And that should be what happens in us, church. And a lot of times, like in politics, and regardless of which side of the fence you're on, we stand for righteousness. And there is so much going on today that opposes that. And it is right and appropriate concerning any attacks against righteousness that we are angry. That there is something that stirs up within us a zeal that wants to defend the honor of God, of his church, of truth. So we see that in David. It's beginning. Again, zeal is not an emotion, it's a devotion. It defends God's honor and the honor of the people of God. Eliab, however, misunderstood what he was seeing. He saw the zeal, but he misunderstood it. Three ways in which he misunderstood it. And I'm going to tell you this, because people, when they view, especially the world, but can it even happen in the church, when they see your zeal, they may misunderstand it. And they may call you out on it. We'll see what happens and why. The first thing we see here in verse 28, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger because he's angry. Why is he angry? Shouldn't everybody be angry with what Goliath is doing? So Eliab hears his brother, and he's angry with his brother because he's misunderstanding what David is communicating. Here's what he says. Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? He is misunderstanding David's zeal for irresponsibility. He just wanted to come and see the fight. He just wanted to be entertained. Why was he here? He was there on a mission sent by his dad. However, where did he leave the supplies? See, they're not with him. He didn't bring the bread with him to the battlefield. That's for later. You know, lunchtime is coming up, not right now. We'll worry about that. He left it with the commander of the supplies. Now, David also sets up a tent. We learn about that in verse 55, because he puts some things from Goliath, like his sword and such, in his tent. Look there in verse 55. David puts Goliath's sword in his tent, along with some other things. So David has already set his tent up. He is intending, apparently, to spend the night. It was only about 10 to 15 miles away. He could have done this because he got up early. He could have done it in a single day, but he wants to be there. He really does. But is he there to be entertained? I'm sure he wanted to be there to see what was going on. And he is there for a good reason. His dad sent him. It's just that he didn't have the supplies with him that his dad sent him with. They're back at the tent. Who did you leave the sheep with? Well, David actually was responsible. He left the sheep with the shepherd. The shepherd is overseeing the sheep. All's good. He's on a mission from his father to his people. And Eliab, his oldest brother, is upset. And then he accuses David, the second thing, he accuses him of being arrogant. He's not being properly respectful of this dangerous situation. See, Eliab is filled with fear. Saul is filled with fear, and they're expecting that's how David should be. He should be afraid. But is David afraid? Absolutely not. And he misunderstands that for arrogance. See, you, David, apparently your zeal's not rooted in knowledge. You don't understand who this Goliath dude is. You don't understand this. He's been coming here. This is apparently his 40th day. He comes here twice a day, 80 times. This is getting old, but we are afraid of him. There's no one that can stand up against him. Saul, who's head and shoulders above everybody, was probably the tallest, and he is afraid. He's at least 3 feet, if not more, shorter than Goliath. And Goliath is about four times his size, body mass. Somewhere between 3 and 4 times his body mass. Goliath is huge. David apparently has not assessed the situation properly. Because if he were, he too would be afraid. And so Eliab is angry. See, David, you should be afraid because I'm afraid and you're not afraid, so therefore you must be arrogant. And he misunderstands his zeal. The third thing is he claims that David is wicked. He only came there to be entertained, and he just wants the reward. He's just in this for the reward, and he has no clue what he's getting into. This younger brother of mine, oh my goodness, oy vey, do I have to take care of him? Do I have to babysit him all the time? And now he's stirring up everybody around him, thinking that nobody is going to fight him, and David's acting as if he wants to go out there and fight him. I've got to rescue my brother. He is an idiot, is what he is. He's angry. David, you have no clue what's going on here. Wealth, Saul's daughter, no taxes. Apparently, David is willing to risk his life for these, but you see, at no point does David, he's wanting to know what's going to happen. But what's really motivating him? Goliath the Intimidator is defying. He's defying the armies of the living God. And the rest of the Israelites, including King Saul, if they heard David saying this and responded to it, they would say, yeah, so? As if he had a right, as if he had the privilege. Yes, speak against our God. Speak against us as the army of the living God. As the ones empowered by God to destroy the Philistines. This was God's promise, given all the way back in Deuteronomy. You will go in and you will destroy them, including the giants. That's what Caleb had in mind. He was given Hebron, and they were filled with Anakites. Anakites, we learned earlier in Deuteronomy, are giants, and he's willing to take them on. Let's go. Even names three of the Anakites the giants. And he takes Hebron, the city, the town that Moses had promised him, because he came back with a good report, you might remember, almost 40 years earlier. Fast forward now, here's another giant. What we would call from the stock of the Nephilim. And David is not intimidated at all. Can I just ask you, has anyone ever misunderstood your zeal or opposed your zeal? If there was just a burning in your heart and you were like, no, this is wrong. This, what they're speaking is not truth, or what they're doing, that's not right. How you're speaking against God, how you're speaking against Christians. Oh, I don't go to church. Everybody there is a hypocrite. You know, I hope that something stirs up in your heart. Not that you speak angrily towards them, but let zeal rise up so that you speak the truth in love. And many times, and I've walked you through this, there are times in which we speak a very firm word. Our goal is love and to speak graciously, but there is that time, and we see it in Jesus' life, in which he speaks very firmly. Even Paul, who calls Elymas, you're the spawn of Satan. That is what he said to him. You're a sorcerer, and you're trying to lead Sergius Paulus astray. We're preaching the gospel to him. He's interested. You're not. From now on, and he curses him. You'll be blind. You'll be groping around in the darkness. And there was a firm word that Paul gave, but Paul generally spoke the truth in love. So, have you ever had someone try to shut you down? I remember when I was in ninth grade, I mentioned this story to you. I had just given my heart to Christ. I think this was the first opportunity that I had to witness, and I did it to John Lavelle. He had a lot of potential in him, but he did not live up to it at all. He was a druggie, as we called him, or actually we called them hoods. I have no idea why they called them hoods. But he would go off into the woods, and he would do his drugs during school time. I remember I spoke with John that day, and he turned around, and he announced to the class, "Mike's got religion." And you heard my story. I tried so hard not to be embarrassed, but it was like my face was on fire. Not because of my zeal, church, because I was embarrassed. And I just kept saying to myself, okay, don't get embarrassed, don't get embarrassed, don't get embarrassed. And I think the more I said it, the more I became more embarrassed. John, whether he was aware of it or not, tried to intimidate me that day. And I have to admit that I didn't want to feel intimidated, but apparently my emotions, I did. I vowed in that day, I will never do that again. Not never evangelize, I will never be ashamed again. God help me. I want to be bold. See, I grew up being a young kid, constantly being teased. There were bullies in my neighborhood. There were bullies at school, bullies on the bus. And they do what bullies do. They bullied me. And there were times in which I felt like a coward. They were much bigger than me, always. However, when my brothers tried to bully me, I fought hard. I even did things I probably shouldn't have. I was very cruel to them in how I chose to fight back. But I was a little kid, and my brother Rob was twice my size. He was Goliath in my life. And he would try to break my back. He would try to, yeah. But I found ways. I found his weaknesses, physical weaknesses. And I'm not proud of it, but I just decided I don't want to be bullied. When I grew up, I don't want to be bullied. And come ninth grade, I realized I just let this guy bully me. I will never let that happen again. And I'll be honest with you, when there is opposition, there is something inside me, and I put a check on it. If I'm trying to defend my own honor, I don't think I need to do that. But if someone else's honor, if God's honor, God, let an anger rise up within me. Let your zeal rise up within me. And we see that here with David. We see it here with David. Satan is our bully. He is going to speak lies to you. You failed. You're not good enough for God to use you. What makes you think you can win this person to the Lord? Like, how many times have you ever shared the gospel in your life? You can't lead this person to Christ. Do you not realize what this person has gone through and the pain and the heartache or just how angry they are at God? You'll never win them. This is what he does. Lie, lie, lie. You're just too weak. Have you ever had the devil whisper those words in your ear? He's an intimidator. You're not skilled enough or gifted enough to win this person to Christ. Even open your mouth and share the gospel. Who do you think you are? He's an intimidator. You're not smart enough. This problem because it's not a person. This problem is just too big. It's too big. Let it go. Just let it go. This problem, it got the better of you. It won. Let it go. Let it go. And that's what the devil will whisper to you over and over and over to intimidate you. We see this in Goliath when David faces him. You come at me with sticks? You're just a boy? Three people misunderstood David's zeal: Eliab, his oldest brother, Saul, and Goliath. Can faith rise up in you today to do this year what you believe God has called you to do? Do you believe this? Then let faith rise up. Faith is at the heart of zeal. Love for God is at the heart of zeal. You know, when the lawyer came up, an expert in the law came up to Jesus, what must I do to gain eternal life? And Jesus said, well, what do you think? And he quotes, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And Jesus said, yeah, you got it. But the smart aleck expert in the law then said, well, who is my neighbor? Because then he said, the second commandment is love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus, yeah, you got both of them right. Well, you know, who's my neighbor? Testing Jesus. Love the Lord your God. How do you gain eternal life? Love the Lord your God. Love God with all of your heart. That is faith. That's believing, because faith is a commitment to. This is what's at the heart of zeal. Let faith arise. If Satan stands up to you and opposes you, let faith arise. Now, so David then says to Saul, because he's looking at him and says, you know, you're only a youth. And he shares the story. By the way, when he says that you're only a boy, the only is not in the Hebrew. He's just simply saying, you're a youth. And that word translated boy, it's fair, but it's the very same word used later in that verse. And it says, this Philistine, Goliath, has been a warrior since his youth. Same Hebrew word. We know that David is not a little boy because he's of fighting age. He's immediately incorporated into the army, and you had to be at least 20 for that to happen. So David's at least 20. And this word is used for young warriors. I won't give the example, but it's used in the context of young warriors in their early 20s. So it covers teenagers and young men. And Goliath has been fighting since he was a young man. David is a young man. The idea is not that he looks tiny, though in movies, right, in comic books about David fighting Goliath, how many of you ever seen David is this short little guy? He's actually a midget somehow, and everybody is like three times taller than him, and he's like a little boy. No, he wasn't. And he now defends himself, and he says this: hey, your servant has fought on two occasions, a lion and a bear. So here's what I did. The lion, the bear, they came, they grabbed one of my sheep. I ran after them and I struck them. Now, this word strike is a very general word. It can mean with your fist, it can mean with a club, it can mean with a sword, it can mean with a stone. Though the word later, that's used later when David strikes the Philistine with the stone, is a different Hebrew word. This is a big word, okay? It's a word that can cover all of these things. So how he struck the lion and the bear, we don't know. Maybe he used his sling to hit them, but the lion and the bear drop the sheep and then turn on David. I think it would have been enough for him to just drop the sheep and move on, but now the bear and the lion turn and come to attack David. So all of you animal lovers, I'm sorry, it's not David's fault. He's defending himself right now. His goal was not to kill the beast, but simply to have him let go of the sheep. That's all he wanted, and now he has to kill the bear or the lion. And the bear or the lion charges him. Now, if he was able to hit him, he hit him sufficiently so that he dropped the lamb, and the bear and the lion is angry. I'm going to assume, I think it's fair, that maybe the bear or the lion is a little bit dazed. The bear or the lion is turning to him, and he manages to get around him And I think he puts a knife in the throat immediately. Done. He strikes him again. I don't think he strikes him again with another sling, because he grabs the hair of either of both the lion and the bear. This is two different occasions, and he's able to kill him. Okay, I don't think he kept hitting him in the head with his fist. I think he used a knife. But the odds were phenomenal that he would have died. He should have, but he didn't. And so I'm going to encourage you. I want you, because this is him recalling. He's thinking of his past. I want you to think of a time in which God rescued you. I want you to think of a time in which you shared the gospel and someone responded, or at least they listened. Whatever the devil's intimidating you with, think of a time in which God actually used you, in which God did something. Rely upon that. And if you've never done it before, think of someone who has, because God empowered them to do it, and he can do that for you. Recall, church. Remember. Think about that time. Let that fuel your zeal. Faith in God always remembers what he has done in the past so we can accomplish what he has called us to in the future. And that then it ignites our zeal, and it did that with David. Let faith arise, church. How did David approach the Philistine? He took off Saul's armor. He set aside his weaponry, and he grabbed his shepherd's bag, well, his Walmart bag, whatever. And he reached down, and it says that he picked up 5 smooth stones, and those 5 smooth stones for someone using a slingshot would be between the size of a golf ball and a baseball. So somewhere between those two sizes, and either of those could have killed Goliath. They say if they're this size, they can be hurled at 90 miles an hour, and it hit him in the head. I can only imagine how fast they would go if they were this size. Now, I say 90 miles an hour because that's what we have. That's what they have discovered in someone writing about a shepherd and how fast he could sling it if the rock was the size of a baseball. But remember, it's not a golf ball. Golf ball has a little bit of bounce to it. Rocks really don't, and rocks are denser. When even something this size would have hit Goliath in the head going, I don't know, a whole lot more than 90 miles an hour, yeah, it would certainly have killed him. And so this is what David does, and all he does is he comes at the Philistine with his sling, his stone, and a stick. Now, I'm just going to encourage you, how many stones did he get? Did he just get one? Did he believe, well, you know what, God's good, I only need one. No, you know, what if I miss? He was open to that possibility, so I'm going to bring 5, but I will take him down. He planned. Don't let your zeal go without planning. Strategize. Ask God, how does he want you to do this? This coming year, what is he laying on your heart? Be filled with zeal, rooted in truth and knowledge, but plan. Don't be afraid to plan. And Goliath opposes him, and I'm just going to conclude with this, because we're going to get into this next week. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with spear, sword, and javelin. I come against you in the name of the Lord. That's what it boils down to, church. That's what it boils down to. The world, whoever it is that's opposing to us, Satan whispering in our ear, they've got just the things that can't kill body or soul, and my God is powerful enough to take care of them. He can empower me to do everything that he has called me to do. So let faith arise. Let zeal burn in our hearts. You know, when my brother Ken gave his, before my brother Ken gave his heart to Christ, he was 68 years old. Several years before that, I asked him, Ken, I'd love to sit down with you and I'd like to talk to you about Jesus. I would love to just share with you, why do I even believe that Jesus is who he said? Why do I believe that the Gospels? And I'd love to just share with you some evidences, some things in my life, stories. And he said, you know what, Mike? No, I don't want to do that. Don't want to do it. He wanted to believe what he wanted to believe. And so I prayed for him. There was a time then my sister was reaching out to him more and to his wife. And God was doing something in my brother's life. He picked up a few books, and it was those books that God used, along with what my sister shared with him. And I remember being on the phone with him, and he was walking me through. He said, "Michael, I think for the first time in my life, I'm getting it." And this is before he gave his heart to Christ. "It's really challenging me." And I said, Ken, listen to what Jenny's telling you. Don't be afraid to give your heart to Jesus. He's absolutely worth it. Absolutely. This book right here, the Bible, it's truth, Ken. It's not a guess. It's not man's best ability to say something that's valuable. It's God's word. And he's speaking to your heart. And about a month or 2 months later, through all different things, God brought my brother, Ken, at age 68, to Jesus Christ. Church, don't let the devil intimidate you. Let zeal rise up in your heart and speak that word of truth. Stand against the opposition of the enemy, that problem that just seems immovable. Speak the word. If you have faith the size of a mustard seed, and that mountain that's opposing you will be cast into the sea. Just a grain of mustard, a small mustard seed of faith. Well, listen, I'm up with my time. I want you to just, as we go through this coming week, I want you to think about zeal. I want you to think about how Satan might be opposing you. And then pray, "God, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? How can I defend your honor and the honor of your people and truth?" Stand with me. Father,